James Hamm from the Insiders, from the Kings beat. Do I want to do this now, or do I want? I'll save it for tomorrow. I know James could talk about anything, but I'll save it for tomorrow because people want to hear, at least right now, they want to hear James talk about anything. But right now, they want their King stuff. But
they don't want to hear a dramatic reading of the Jerry Jones conversation. No,
but I will.
It was like a lot with Jerry.
Less than a 24-hour tease.
He's fighting it so bad right now. He just wants to do it.
Look. Less than a 24-hour tease. Jerry Jones, GM Kenny Caraway, kind of on the same page. I'll talk about it tomorrow. Jerry Jones, GM Kenny Caraway, might have made the same arguments for some people. We'll talk about it tomorrow, though. We will. We got James Hamm. He's rocking with us. And James, is it safe? Like, is this officially when the NBA off season? Like, it is off. The NBA is off for what, about 2.5 months now? Officially?
Yeah, we got about 10 weeks. 10 weeks of silence. But that doesn't mean that nothing will happen.
Schedule's coming out probably in a couple weeks.
Yeah, this is that moment where things kind of chill out. Summer league's over. There's going to be some signings. There'll probably still be a handful of trades between now and the start of training camp. And then, you know, maybe the ramp up to training camp the week before, a couple of four, we'll start hearing about training camp rosters and who might get, you know, a couple of those extra spots on the roster. Let me think. How many weeks is it? Yeah. It's about 10 weeks, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, all of August, all of September, and then we start training camp the first weekend of October.
Sorry for those who were watching on YouTube. I distracted James with it. That was a show, but that was another impression. That was me doing Dwayne Johnson. He said, 6 weeks. We've got 6 weeks, guys. Sounded like The Rock, so that's what that was all about. So sorry, I distracted James. 10 weeks is what the NBA has. 10 weeks. They've got 10 weeks, guys. 10 weeks. But yeah, man, like you were just kind of breaking down, like finally maybe the league gets to catch their breath a little bit.
Yeah, like I think, you know, today the Kings, right before we went off the air while we were doing the handoff, the Kings added Doug McDermott. We have that confirmed. I have that confirmed through a league source. Doug McDermott will join the Kings. And so people understand Doug McDermott's going to make like $3.6 million. Mm-hmm. But only it's a league minimum deal. So it's for the veteran minimum. So he's going to get paid the 3.6, but only like 2.2 will count against luxury tax dollar or the salary cap as it is. So, you know, the Kings have maybe a roster spot, maybe two roster spots open, depending on what they do with guys like Terrence Davis, what they do with guys like Isaac Jones, and of course, Dario Saric, who they acquired in the Jonas Valanciunas trade. Still plenty of flexibility there, but we'll get closer to camp, and that's when you'll start hearing like Exhibit 10 contracts, which are those summer contracts that the guys sign. Sometimes they come with like a bunch of guaranteed money. Other times they come with no guaranteed money. You know, and some of those guys will play at the G League level. Some of them won't. Yeah, this is going to be the quiet time. And to be honest, I'm a little surprised about the Doug McDermott signing. A really, really good dude, a good dude behind the scenes. Like everyone likes Doug McDermott. He's just like a super nice guy, good culture guy, you know, solid veteran. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, he doesn't sort of fit all the bill that they need, which is length, athleticism, and all that stuff. The one thing he can do is we all know he can shoot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What does this signing of Doug McDermott say to you, if anything? It could like we could be making something out of nothing, but does it signal anything to you at all, like with the direction, with does it say anything to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing is that like I know there are a lot of people out there always wanting to know about like a Kuminga trade, and the Kuminga trade is so complex that this actually could impact the Kuminga trade, like a potential for a Kuminga trade. And, you know, I mean, there's still ways around it, but the Kings just don't have a, like, any money really between what we always talk about between the salary cap and the luxury tax. There's this buffer zone, and they're up tight against the luxury tax now. And, you know, anytime you bring in another $2 million player, gets you closer and closer and closer. They're pretty tight next to the salary cap at this point, or the luxury tax at this point. And the reason I bring that up is because of the base year compensation issue with Kuminga. He counts as, let's say, just for sake of argument, the Kings sign him to a $20 million deal, or the Warriors do, and then trade him to the Kings. He only counts for half as much going out as so when he comes onto your team, he counts for 20 million, mm-hmm. but for Golden State, he only counts for like half of that. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes this like really convoluted, like formula to try to fit salary into that. And so that would mean that the Kings are going to have more salary available than they have going. They would want more salary under the luxury tax when they would take in a player like that. And so it could signal the end of any pursuit of Kuminga at this point, but there's always ways around it. I mean, like, these guys are, you know, mad geniuses behind the scenes with their ability to circumvent the salary cap, or at least use the rules of the salary cap to their advantage. But it certainly does look as though the Kings are finalizing their roster, which is pretty early to finalize a roster. Because last year they signed Doug McDermott like the day before the season started, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, he hadn't even worked out for the team. He hadn't worked out for anybody. And all of a sudden they signed him one day. Yeah. And he played a bunch of minutes the next night.
Yeah. So it didn't really signal much to me, but I wondered if maybe you saw something a little deeper in the weeds with a Doug McDermott signing. Where are they at right now with roster spots and available roster spots after this signing?
Okay, so I have them at five guards. So let me just Devin Carter, Malik Monk, Dennis Schroeder, Keon Ellis, Zach LaVine. And then if we go to the small forward spot, we've got Neek, we've got DeMar DeRozan, and now you have Doug McDermott. So that puts us at eight. You slide over, you got Isaac Jones, you've got Keegan Murray, you've got Dario Saric. So that's 11 at the center position. You've got Domantas Sabonis, you've got Drew Eubanks, and of course, Maxime Reynaud. So that's 14. And that's even without mentioning Terrence Davis. So Terrence Davis is currently under contract, but it's a non-guaranteed contract. So as of right now, they're at 15. They do have two of their two-way contracts filled with one to go. So that would put them at 18 if they fill that third two-way. And then for training camp and for this time of year, you're allowed to carry up to 21. So they still have three more roster spots that they can use. Mm-hmm. So they have roster spots right now, but they're going to have to, you know, figure out what they're doing again with a guy like Dario Saric, a guy like Terrence Davis. I mean, Isaac Jones played well enough at summer league that I would be shocked if they moved on from him, but I don't know. Stranger things have happened here in Sacramento.
I do want to ask you, a little bit more about Isaac Jones and some of those guys in summer league, but I want to run something past you that I talked about a little bit earlier in the show. And I had the disclaimer. I made it perfectly clear. I said, this is, for some people, may sound like hate. It may sound like I'm pitting people against each other. I promise you I'm not. It's an observation, and it is me saying, this is what I'm looking for, and this is why I think this guy is better here. Talking about Neek Clifford. And I talked about some of the things that we saw from him on the offensive end during summer league, the way he was able to handle the basketball, the way he was able to create, the way he was able to score on all three levels. He still got to work on that three-pointer a little bit. I know it was better than people probably thought, but he still, you know, that's something he needs to continue to work on. But his ability to create off the bounce and on all three levels, I looked at that, and there was a move specifically, I think, in the Cavs game where he did a spin move and kept it in his right hand, brought it back on a little step back, hit a mid-range jumper. Just beautiful. Reminded me of Penny Hardaway in like the 97 playoffs or something like that. And I said, I ain't never seen Keegan Murray do something like that. Never seen them doing that like that. Now, here's the pause. This is where people are like, wait, there he goes. He's going at Keegan. I'm not. What I'm saying is, for a guy that's a three, that's the type of offensive ability I think my three should have. Way what Neat Clifford can do, the way he can move, the way he can handle on all three levels. A lot of people look at Keegan and say he's playing out of place and he needs to play at the three. I don't think he has that in his game. I don't think he has that in his bag. I think, and I may be in the minority, I think he's just fine at the four. I think Keegan Murray is just fine as a stretch four. And I used seeing the way Neat moves on the offensive end to say that's more so what I want from a three. And Keegan, he can still play some three here and there, but when you talk about starting, I like him more at the four. I think he works well there. Do you kind of feel the same way? Do you see what I'm saying when I talk about the differences between Neek at the three and Keegan at the three, or is it just something like, nah, I don't see it that way?
No, I understand fully what you're saying, because it's, you know, you want specific positions to have, you know, like the prerequisite skill, right? The skill set. I would caution that if we rewind to last season when we watched Keegan Murray at Summer League and he went into the, you know, the California Classic and just kicked everyone's butt. Mm. I mean, he was just way better than everybody. I mean, didn't he put up 30 twice?
Yeah. Did he play both games? I thought it was... Yeah, maybe two games. Yeah, both games. Yeah, he went crazy.
Yeah, I think he played two. He went crazy. And so I would caution that, you know, number one, Summer League is different. It's not the NBA. Number two, you're given a longer leash at the NBA, at the Summer League level than you are at the NBA level. Mm-hmm. So here's the advantage that I think Neek has over even Keegan, right? We talked to the assistant coach at Colorado State that has now been elevated to the head coach at Colorado State right after he got drafted. Kyle and I had him on the Insiders and he was absolutely spectacular. But, you know, they got Neek as he had been at Colorado for 3 years and then transferred to Colorado State for his last 2 years and played 5 years of college ball. And if you look at Neek Clifford's stats, his freshman and sophomore's junior year, and then he had another junior year and then a final senior year. If you look at his stats at Colorado, he's not an NBA player at all, right? And then when he gets to last year, you know, like he tried out, he went into the 2024 NBA draft process. He went around and tested. He went around and saw where teams saw him and everyone looked at him and said, you're a 3-and-D wing. Mm-hmm. And that's it, which you're probably going to get drafted, but it might be in the second round, you know? So he said, okay, I'm going to pull my name out. I'm going to go back to Colorado State for another year. And they had a game plan for him when he went back to Colorado State. It was to increase his scoring. It was to have him be more of a ball handler and put the ball in his hands and let him create for himself and for others. It was to teach him how to take contact and go into the key and hit people and still be able to score. Mm-hmm. And there were like these avenues for him to get better incrementally with his scoring, with his, you know, again, with his assist totals, all this stuff as a creator. And the reason I bring this up when it pertains to Keegan is that Keegan didn't do this. Keegan was an older sophomore. He's like 21 years old as a sophomore when he was drafted, but he was a sophomore. Mm-hmm. He didn't go through that extra 2 years of college where not only are you a really good player, but you're able to take a step and add more to your game and add another additional step to your game. Mm-hmm. So I think just when you look at Neek, he comes into the league as more of a polished product than Keegan was because he spent 5 years in college. I mean, we're talking about a 23-year-old who turned 24 in his rookie season, right? Mm-hmm. That's not a young prospect. And that's okay because, look, you know, NBA players, you're lucky if you can get 10 years. If you can get 12 years, that'd be great. So what, if he gets 12 years, we're looking at him turning 35 years old before his you know, like his 12th season. Mm-hmm. So that's fine. But I think when you look at Keegan and you try to compare him, it's just difficult because you know, that those years of development actually matter. And when Keegan went to the NBA, it wasn't to focus on getting better drawing fouls and creating for others. It was, how can we bulk you up? How can we, you know, they redefined his body from year one to year two. He was a completely different player. His body is completely different than when he was a rookie. You can look at his brother and look at the difference between the two of them now, where when they were at Iowa, you couldn't tell them apart at all. Mm-hmm. Like, they are like identical twins, but you couldn't tell them apart hardly at all. And now you can totally tell them apart because their bodies are different. And that's because the Kings and, you know, Keegan doing the work, they put in the time and the energy to turn him into the type of player that they wanted to turn him into. Mm-hmm. Now, I feel like the Kings spent so much time working on his physique and his lateral quickness and all of this stuff that we've seen that translate to being an incredible defender. But what they haven't done is put the ball in his hands and said, hey, we're going to send you to summer league and we want you to run the point for two games. Mm-hmm. And that's what even like this week, Neek got. Like, we didn't expect that for Neek Clifford to get that opportunity, but to go out there and be a point guard. And then at the end of the finals game, you're the guy with the ball in your hands. And I think not only did he show like a really, really high level of basketball IQ, but he also showed you that like he knew how to set up the offense. He didn't just bring the ball over and toss it to somebody else and then go, you know, run to the corner. He ran the entire offense. He got in a pick and roll situation with Renault. He started using not only would he have like use a screen, but then he'd back off and let the screen reset and then attack again. And then he's looking for his teammates. Like, I was super, super impressed with just a complete game that he has. But we also have to look at it as, you know, he went through and basically got a master's degree in basketball from Colorado State, where Keegan was still working under, you know, his lower class skills when he got to the NBA. And sure, the NBA, they work on a lot of things, but sometimes they put you in a box. Yeah. And right now it feels like Keegan's in a box. And if he wants to be more like Neek Clifford, he's going to have to do a lot of work on the outside without the Kings. And I know he's done a lot of that this summer, but that's what he's going to have to do if he wants to develop all of the skills that it requires to be the type of player that you're talking about specifically, that small forward with a bag, yeah. Right?
And for the people hearing this for the first time, I explained it earlier. I'll do it again, no problem. This is not anything against Keegan Murray. This isn't even to say Neek Clifford is better than Keegan Murray. I think Keegan Murray is clearly a better player, right? I mean, Neek Clifford just played in summer league. Like, there's no way I would think he's better than Keegan Murray today. I don't even think Neek should be starting. That's not what I'm saying either. It's more geared to the argument that people had that he was playing out of position, talking about Keegan Murray, and he should be at the three. And I look at the way Neek Clifford is able to do things on the offensive end, and that's more comparable to a Nesmith, more comparable to Mikal Bridges or OG Anunoby, more comparable to J-Dub, more comparable to Jaden McDaniels, you know, those guys that can score on all three levels. And I haven't seen enough of that from Keegan to be confident that he can. And the way basketball is being played, the NBA is being played nowadays, once again, I may be in the minority, I think Keegan is like the perfect stretch four. Like, I think he's great at the four, and he's got the ability to, in certain lineups and certain situations, slide down to the three, guard threes, do things that way. But, you know, to a certain degree, he kind of reminds me, he doesn't rebound as well as him, but he reminds me of a guy like Markkanen, with the way he can stretch the floor and the way he can create mismatches and play well with Domas. And I think he's good at the four, but, you know, I know a lot of people are pining for him to get in that three slot.
Well, I'd also, like, the one other thing we're going to have to find out is, what does Neek Clifford look like when he's playing with DeMar DeRozan, with Zach LaVine, with Domantas Sabonis, with Dennis Schroeder and Malik Monk? You know, we might see the same exact thing that we see from Keegan, and that's that he's going to look like a guy who stands in the corner and waits for a shot, you know? And that's kind of the Kings offense.
But James, I don't know if you remember the move I'm talking about. I don't even think Keegan can do that move. That's my point. It's not even about the – I don't even think he can execute that move in a game. And that's not to say he's not a good player or less than Neek. That's just not his skill set. And that's kind of where that comes from for me.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. But I would also tell you, like, you know that Keegan Murray was in the 98th percentile in post scorers in his sophomore year at college. And he might have scored – like, what? How many post-ups do you think he's got in 3 years?
Four.
Yeah. 12. Like,
they need to add that to his game. They need to incorporate that into his game. I think he'd do really well in the post, especially on a mismatch.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I'm just saying that, like, that's the NBA. Like, your transition from the college game to the pro game is so difficult. And some players, like, they find an opportunity where you go to a bad team and they're just like, hey, go ahead and do whatever you want. We're okay. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and grow. Go ahead and do all of these things. And then some teams you get to and they're like, hey, we're a veteran team and we're looking to win a whole bunch of games. And so some guys develop faster than others. Some guys become just really, really good role players, which is what at this point Keegan has become. You hope that he would have become more than just like a good role player. And I still think he can be a star in a role, but I still look at him as a role player where, you know, again, even after his first season, I think we were thinking I didn't see like 1A, but I definitely saw like a second scoring option, a number two scoring option at the NBA level. And now it's like, okay, he might be able to get up to 18 points a game, but it might have to be in like a Cam Johnson situation where you go to a team that's just horrible. And you're the only person who can score and you're going to get 18 to 20 and you're going to get that because, again, there's no one else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's you and a guy like Cam Thomas who's chucking up shots all over the place. But the two of you have to figure out a way to score 50 or 60 every night or your team is going to lose by 30. Yeah. And, you know, that's not the situation Keegan has been in his first 3 years in the league. And so I think it does like change our opinion of what he looks like, but I'd also caution people like, you know, how much damage do you think Nick Clifford's going to do in 12 to 16 minutes a night? And let's say clear out a bunch of players in front of him. It's not going to be easy for him to get more than that.
Yeah. Moral of the story is I love Keegan Murray. I just think he's a four. I think he's a guy that defensively he can guard threes for sure. Like, depending on the matchup, like, he could be there. But I think, and it's not even that I don't think he can be a three. I think he'd be great at that stretch four position, especially with a guy like Domas. You know, clearing space for him, giving Domas space to operate, being on the perimeter, being ready to catch and shoot or cut and do all this other stuff, get to the bucket that way. Like you talked about it, James. I wish when Domas is out, maybe they find a way to do some high-low action and incorporate Keegan are in the post somewhere, you know what I mean? So, but I just think that's more suited for his game right now. But you're right. Maybe there's more to it that we haven't even seen yet.
Well, yeah. And like, I don't want to, like, Keegan, I know people are like, he's going into his fourth season. He's 25 years old, almost 25. Like, he's not a young player, but he is. Like, you know, one of the reasons why the Kings drafted him, then they were so high on him, is because they saw a very young, like, player, a young body, a player who had grown late, who was a late bloomer, who really came into his own, you know, when he was 19, 20, not when he was, you know, 16, 17, like some of these other players that you see. And so they were excited about sort of the adventure that they could take and the experiment that would be Keegan Murray. And to be honest with you, like, that's proven out. Like, their ability to manipulate his body and to turn him into different things is very unique. It's not something that you get all the time at the NBA level. And, you know, hat tip to Keegan for doing the actual work, but also the training staff has been there the whole time working to help create this type of player. And, you know, maybe getting away from the Kings system and getting away from the Kings like practice facility for a couple of months and doing some things on your own and with different people, that can go a long way. It can give him a different perspective and he can come back like a very, very different player, but it's still going to be within the confines of the Kings offense and who gets what touches. And unless they have him with a coach that's yelling and teaching him how to yell at people all the time. I don't know how much they're going to be able to change like his opportunity. Like, you hope that he would seize the opportunity and take four more shots a game, but you know, he's literally going to have to punch somebody in the face and just like take their shots. And that's not who Keegan is.
Hold on, James. I'm writing this down right now so I can tell Scott Perry, you need to hire a Yale coach.
Yeah.
That's all. Just get a Yale coach there. Maybe he can be a second row guy, but they need a Yale coach there.
Go get the one that that taught Maxime Reynaud how to yell, because that guy knows how to yell.
That's right.
Yeah. Go find the guy at Stanford that helped Maxime yell, and not in French, yell in, you know, English. Go find that guy, because, you know, like, it's a skill. Keegan has a lot of skill and he has a lot of really positive attributes, but being a advocate for himself is not one of them. Mm. And that's tough, you know?
Yeah. I want to ask you about Maxine and Devin and Neek and Isaac Jones and all those other guys. As Summer League finally came to a conclusion yesterday, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with my guy, James Hamm, of the Insiders, of the Kings Beat, right here on D-Lo and KC on ESPN 1320. D-Lo and KC, ESPN 1320. I got my main man, James Hamm, as we talk about ribs.
We talk about ribs.
We talk about the cookout out in Charlotte, North Carolina, where you can get a hot dog, ribs, or a quesadilla, or all three. They got a little bit of everything there, man. So shout out to the kid. I didn't even get a chance to go to the cookout, but somebody asked me about it. So yeah, shout out to the cookout. But James, you said you make ribs where you make like your Thanksgiving turkey?
Yeah. So I take my turkey pan. And so I'll do a dry rub on the ribs, and then I lean them up on their ends, and I use skewers to keep them up, and then I put a tent of tinfoil over my ribs, and I put like maybe a half inch of water and then liquid smoke, and then I just put it the lowest setting in my oven, and I'll leave them in overnight, so like 9 or 10 hours.
Okay.
Then when I'm done, I wrap them back up, I'll take them out on the boat, and then I throw them on the grill, and then I start basting with barbecue sauce.
That's a hell of a process. That's a hell of a process. Sounds pretty good, though. I'm starving, so that sounds great.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say I don't ever get, like, the barbecued ribs. You know, I'll eat them or whatever, especially if the ribs are cooked or grilled the right way, where, you know, fall off the bone type stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It's all good. But you give me a choice. 10 times out of 10, I want the rub ribs instead of the barbecue joints. I don't need barbecue. Yeah, I don't need barbecue sauce on it. Just give me the rub ribs. So now we cook.
Okay.
Wifey already knows too. I got you a slab of rub ribs over here. Yeah.
I'm the opposite. Throw extra barbecue sauce on mine.
I caramelize it. You gotta let it cook, and then you gotta flip it, and then you gotta cover the grill marks and let that caramelize. Mm-hmm. Flip them again. Oh yeah.
We cook it. Like I said, the barbecue sauce, it's not nasty. It's not nothing like that. It's good. It's really good. I enjoy it. But if you gave me the choice, every single time I'm going for the rub rib joints. That's it.
All right. That's all it is. All right.
I wonder what kind of ribs Maxime Reynaud likes, because I don't know.
They don't really do ribs in France.
it's not France, but what did your boy Sasha say? There's too much flavor on the food out here.
Yeah,
oh, that's Sasha. He hated all U.S. food. It's like, no. He's like, there's too much. He's like, just a little salt, just a little pepper. He's like, not here. Everything. Like,
oh, bland like, ass.
You don't want to eat food because it tastes too good? Because everything has too much flavor. I'm like, really, bro? Oh, yeah, we would talk about it all the time. And then I would make fun of him. Yeah.
That's funny. Maxime Reynaud, though, I don't know what he likes out on his ribs, but I know he can play basketball. Pretty good summer session for Maxine. Pretty good. We talk about Neek, and we'll get into his summer as well. But Maxine started off really hot, kind of cooled off as the summer went along. But we were talking about grades earlier, and I gave Max a B for his summer. He showed me a lot of the stuff that I was looking for to see from him this summer.
Yeah. So. I think, okay, number one, we saw a kid shoot the three. We saw him, you know, he's got a soft touch around the basket. He needs to get bigger. He needs to get stronger. And, you know, like, again, the Kings training staff is great, and they're going to get him in the lab, and they're going to do a lot of what they did with Keegan. You can tell they're going to try to make him quicker and, like, better lateral, and then they're going to work on bulking him up. And not only bulking him up, but toughening him up, because he's going to go up against, you know, Sabonis all through camp and get beat up every day. He's going to come out of there like looking for ice bags because he's going to have bruises all over his body. And I think the same, like, Drew Eubanks can hold his own too. Like, he pushes back. And even Isaac Jones, I would like Reno and Jones are probably going to play a lot against each other over the next 10 weeks while they're just doing pickup games. And that's really good because Isaac is very physical. And Isaac is one of those guys who's not yoked, but he has an ability to get like his body on you, and you can't get away from him. And that's how I think he does a lot of, like, when he goes in the post, he'll pin his man down with his body, and then it allows him to hang in the air longer. And, you know, guys are swiping at the ball and stuff, and then they go away and he's still floating and is able to get a shot up. I think that's good. Like, you want to be able to play against different styles of players. And I would even say, like, Reno is going to play against Keegan quite a bit, you know, in practice. You're going to see a lot of that. Those are good things. Like, he's going to grow up really, really quick. But I think when you look at his body style, he has the look of a guy who might be able to play a stretch four. You know, I thought he moved so well in space, and I was really impressed. You know, again, the toughness issue is going to be something he has to deal with at the NBA level, rebounding better, and that's part of the toughness thing. But his ability to defend on the perimeter, like, if he can show that he can stay with fours, then he opens the door for him to play alongside Domas. And not just be a backup to Domas. And so I think that would be a really, really good thing for him. And coming out of Summer League, I don't know about you, Kenny, but I kind of look at him now as like a 20s first round pick. Mm-hmm. Like, he's legit, like, he should have been a first round pick. Yeah. And he showed me enough that you're like, oh yeah, he's got skill. And the guy that, you know, in his first Summer League, in his first like rookie year, that I think, Reno kind of reminds me of a little bit is Vucevic. Vucevic is bigger, you know, just like he's, but it's because he's older. Right. But a 19-year-old Vucevic coming out of USC, a lot of those same skills, a lot of that same skill. And I think what Vucevic went 19 or 20 in the draft, right around there. That's where I look at Reno and I'm like, oh yeah, this kid probably should have gone 19 or 20. But when you factor in the age, and, you know, sort of his experience, I think that is it's a negative for a lot of teams. And for the Kings, it's just not. And so, what, he's 22 years old, but super bright. What is he, he's a mathematics and I think computer science major.
He's borderline genius.
Stanford?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, genius. I mean, at Stanford, not at some, you know.
Right. Yeah. I've made the comparison. I mean, we hadn't even talked about this, but I made the comparison to Vooch before.
Well, oh, I hadn't heard that. Yeah, I hadn't heard you say that.
Him and Sengun is what I see from Maxine. I think Sengun can handle the ball a little bit better than Maxine, but Big Vooch, that's exactly some of the same things that I see. The one thing.
Yeah, I would say Sengun has better footwork.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure. The one thing that I want to see from him when we talk about Reynaud. And we saw yesterday, it's not the end all be all. It is still just Summer League. But I saw things yesterday that I love to see because it gives me some answers. That game yesterday was intense. They were playing. Those guys were playing. Both teams were playing. There were things at stake. Both teams got into it and wanted to win. Got a little physical. And I think, it's the Summer League Finals. It's not the NBA Finals. But you could see some things. It gets a little competitive. It gets a little physical. The rest were letting them play a little bit. And one of the knocks during the draft process on Reynaud, they would say he don't like to be touched. Gets a little physical, shy off a little bit. And I'm not saying that this is who he is and who he's going to be, but I feel like I saw a little bit of that yesterday. Game got a little physical. And it's not that he was scared, But he got a little uncomfortable with the shot. He had some floaters that he usually makes that he was thrown off by a little bit. He didn't rebound as aggressively as I would have liked him to. So little things like that I was able to notice that maybe the coaching staff and Reynolds himself can notice and say, okay, I want to improve in these areas in these situations.
Well, that and, you know, Dip, the Summer League head coach, Depeche Mystery, like, he sat him. Like, hey, man, if you're not, this is the finals. Like, we're going for the win. If you're not going to be physical, if you're not going to keep up, then I'm going to go with somebody else. And they went small ball. And again, I think Isaac Jones has helped himself tremendously every step of the way. He was phenomenal all the way through. It's just going to be a process. It's a process of developing a young center. We all know the centers usually take till they're like 24, 25 to fully develop. But I definitely see that there's a tremendous ceiling with Reno, and you're just going to have to give him time to develop. And that's why, you know, they brought in a guy like Drew Eubanks. You know, if you have big old, Valanciunas, mm-hmm. Valanciunas is going to play every minute at the backup center spot. And then when Sabonis is hurt, he's going to play 35 minutes a night. Mm-hmm. Well, you move him out of there, and then you make it an open competition between Eubanks and Reynolds, maybe even Isaac Jones as a backup five as well. And you start to see where there can be a competition and there can be actual a pathway to play minutes if you do what they ask. Yeah. But I'd also say, man, teaching that physicality piece, it's not simple. You know, like, I know you coach basketball. I coach soccer forever. We're trying to teach kids how to be physical. Next thing you know, they're running down the field with like their shoulder, like pushing on someone else's shoulder. You're like, hey, man, no, you got to get your hip into somebody. You got to be physical, knock them off their line. And I remember watching Big Bob Thornton, who was one of Dave Yeager's assistants, and he had a big old like football arm pad. And you know, it's a one, like, it looks like a shield. I think it is called a shield, but a big pad. And he would beat on Scalabissiere after practice. Mm-hmm. Scal would go into the post and he'd just be hammering him. And Bob was a huge man, you know, a legit like 6'8" to like, well, probably 300 pounds and like running into Scal as hard as he could. And you're just trying to teach him the physicality of it. And to be honest, one of the reasons why Scal wasn't successful in the league is because he never figured out that piece. Mm-hmm. And they did the same thing with Marvin Bagley. They beat on Marvin, trying to get him to understand that, like, look, you're at the pro level. You need to go up strong. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to go through people as much as you got to go around people. And so I think they'll be doing the same, a similar type of thing when it comes to Reno here in the next couple of weeks.
And one of the things with that, James, is we got James Hamm from the Insiders and the Kings beat here talking a little Kings basketball, is when you're trying to add physicality to somebody's game, I think to a certain degree you can do that a little bit, but sometimes it's just in your veins. It's in you. Like, are you,
yeah.
Do you have that type of level of aggression to your game? And are you comfortable with that? By nature. So I think that's kind of one of the things that you always worry about, but it's also comparable to a point guard, right? You're either a point guard, you're born a point guard, or you're not born a point guard. And one of the things that I feel like we learned this summer, that Devin Carter was not born a point guard. And they tried it this summer. This is where you should try that and give them those type of reps. He tried to work on it during the summer, before summer league, all this other stuff. But by nature, I don't believe that's who he is. Do you think that's a little too quick to close the book on a Devin Carter being a point guard, or do you see the same things?
No, I see the same thing. And, you know, I think the key thing that you said there is by nature. Like, he doesn't want to be a point guard. He can say, yeah, I'll play it. I think I can be a point guard. But when he gets out there, his mentality is not a point guard's mentality. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think you're right. There's like, you've played basketball with a million different types of people, but like either you're a shot blocker or you're not. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter how tall you are. Right. You know, you can get a 7 foot tall guy who can't block shots at all. Actually, we've seen those all the time. Yeah. Like all the time at the NBA level, you're like, man, why don't you block shots? And then you get, you know, your who was it that, well, Malik Monk and De'Aaron Fox both are tremendous shot blockers for their position. And it's because they have timing for it.
Right.
You know, like, so you go out and you play pickup and you're like, why does that 5'8" guy keep blocking everybody? That doesn't make any sense. And it's like, well, he just has a timing. He has a natural ability for it. And he's searching it. Mm-hmm. He's searching for it, right? Where I thought that, you know, again, Devin got better as it went along, as camp went along, or summer league went along. But he never had a moment where you're just like, that's it. You know, like he had the 6 assist game, and I think 4 of them were on lead out passes that were great. But that's not being a point guard. That's being an outlet pass guy. And I thought that those were like really strong things to add to the fact that he's a great rebounder. But on top of that, it's like nothing else came in the half court. And even if it was like a breakdown play and he found Isaac Jones under the hoop for a dunk. So I think he got a little bit better at it, but there's a big difference between getting a little bit better at something and being at NBA level. And that's the problem. Like, you know, you have to come into the league with an NBA skill, and his NBA skill is still, to me, it's his ability to play defense and his ability to rebound, but everything else is in question and he needs to figure out what his pathway is. And it's really tough because he's, you know, 6'2", 6'3" in shoes, and it limits where you can play on the court. And so, you know, that's why we talked earlier about like the potential of Ben Simmons, why I would not close the door on Ben Simmons. And it's because Ben Simmons can be your backup point guard. He can also be your backup 3, your backup 4, your backup 5, because he's versatile. Now, he's not going to hit a 3, but he's a great passer. He's a great defensive player. And he's one of the most versatile players in the league, especially on the defensive end. But he's also
6'10". Right.
And gives you size mismatches all over the place where, you know, again, if you're going to go out and sign a Malcolm Brogdon or you're going to sign a Russell Westbrook, they can play the one or the two, and that's it. And you sort of limit who you are. And if you're not looking for a player who can play 20-something minutes as a backup point guard, then you need a player that you can play 20 minutes. If he plays 20 minutes, but he can play 5 different positions and play 4 minutes at each position, then you might have something.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about Isaac Jones. A really strong finish to summer league. Big time game last night in the championship game. Listening to the insiders earlier, and you and Kyle both believe he's earned a look, a real look with the big club going into training camp. I agree. I think he's earned the opportunity. But let me ask you, what does that mean to you? Does that mean he's earned the right to, oh yeah, we're going to have him in the rotation when the season starts? Or has he earned the right to, when you come to training camp, we're going to give you every opportunity to get into the rotation? Like, what does getting a look mean in your eyes?
Okay, so the first thing I'll point out, again, I keep talking about like this 10 weeks, the 10 weeks that are ahead of us.
10 weeks, James. 10 weeks. That's all it took. 10 weeks. 10 weeks.
There it is. There it is. It's a lot. That's a lot of time. And if Isaac Jones takes that serious, I mean, that's enough time to drop 5 pounds, 8 pounds. It's enough to bulk up. It's enough to like really to change even your body this late in the offseason. Still a tremendous amount of time. But what I like about where he's heading is, number one, I think he's going to be able to score at the NBA level nonstop. He's going to have to get better as a rebounder. He's going to have to get his body in better shape and all that stuff. But I think he's proven to me that he can score. And that is a very good skill to have when most of your opportunities to score for him are going to be around the basket. He's worked on his 3-point shot. He took out, he kept coming up short last year, and he's talked about the fact that he's been able to, you know, sort of push the ball deeper, on his 3-point shot. And that's really helped him clean up a bunch of stuff. But like, look, why can't he be back the backup 4? Like, you don't have another big man that can score in the post. And even last year, you know, the Kings had Trey Lyles, and that was their backup 4. But, you know, he was hurt so often that you really couldn't get in a flow. And so at this point, where you're looking for somebody who can fill that void, And, you know, I think if Dario Saric is on the team, he might be one of those players. But again, defensively, it's not going to, he's not a good defensive player at all at this point in his career. But, you know, I think Isaac is a guy that I would give every opportunity to win a rotational spot in training camp and in preseason. And it might not happen. You know, he may or may not be able to sort of break through. But what I will say is that Doug Christie was sitting there on the sidelines cheering on his team every single game. You saw it. You saw him. You saw BJ Armstrong, Scott Perry. You know, Alvin Gentry was there a bunch. You saw just a ton of Kings front office and coaching staff guys sitting there evaluating, but also cheering on their players. Yeah. And I think what I really felt like last season is that Doug wasn't able to get comfortable with Isaac Jones as a player. And I don't know why that was, but you could kind of see that, like, when Mike Brown was coaching, Isaac Jones had an opportunity to play. As soon as Mike got fired, you know, you can look at the numbers. He was playing a bunch of minutes in December, and then all of a sudden, January, February, he started to tail off. You had a couple of injuries that forced Isaac Jones back onto the court. But, you know, the second half of the season, he averaged like 5.5 minutes a game. That's about, you know, a young coach, you know, as far as Doug being his first time being the head coach and relying on veterans that you trust, mm-hmm. as opposed to young players that you might not trust. Now, the good thing for Isaac is he spent a bunch of time in the last couple of weeks working with Doug, and he's been in, you know, Sacramento a bunch working with Doug and the coaching staff here and there. Mm-hmm. So maybe there is that opportunity where he's built that trust. And so we might get to have an, you know, the chance to see him on the court a little bit more. And, like, man, I think he's got potential to be a ball player. I think he's, you know, again, I'm not expecting him to be, you know, we talked about this earlier, like Aaron Gordon or John Collins. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if we use King references, I definitely could see him being Lawrence Funderburk or Darius Singala. You know, those guys that scored, that brought a lot to the game, but you weren't, like, you're not going to start him. You're not going to play him 35 minutes a night unless he's on a roll. But what he is a very valuable player, and he's a young player that can score in a pinch, and he's very affordable. Mm-hmm. And so I would give him a shot, especially with no one really behind Keegan Murray at the backup, like power forward.
Right, right. James, let's get you out of here on this. How do you think the summer went for the Kings, man? Was it as a whole for the organization? I'm just talking about summer league, really, but for the organization, like, was it like a B? I think I gave the whole organization like a B+. Like, you found some players, you got some answers with some of these rookies. How do you think summer league went in your eyes for the Sacramento Kings?
Yeah, I think I would give them closer to an A. I mean, they lost the summer league finals, mm-hmm. and not only that, but you got a really good look at some of these players. You know, Kyle and I talked about it earlier about, like, we're both pulling for Isaiah Crawford to have like a really strong showing, and he just didn't. Yeah. And you learned a little bit, but Plowden, you know, came out and played really hard, and maybe he gets an invite, you know, maybe some of the other guys that you got a little bit of look at. But I think the biggest thing is, you know, again, Isaac Jones took a step that I don't think that we thought he would take, a step where he scored 36 and 24 in the final two games, mm-hmm. And just really, really looked effective. I thought Reynaud was great. I thought Neat Clifford was, you know, a breath of fresh air and really one of the talks of summer league. Mm-hmm. Like, people are saying, oh my gosh, how did this guy slide so far? Mm-hmm. And then Reynaud, you know, you got a guy who you're able to sort of set what the baseline is for him. And now what can you do to build off of that? And how do you attack this next 10 weeks and help create him into a player that can be functional and can help your team, you know, at the NBA level in his rookie season? Maybe that happens, maybe it doesn't, but I definitely think that, you know, you learned quite a bit about your players. And hey, Mason Jones made some mistakes there in the final game, yeah. But shout out to Mason Jones, who, like, I thought he was gritty. I thought he kept giving his team whatever it is they needed, and a dude who played through an oblique injury, which is nearly impossible to do for a guard. Mm. So I thought Mason really stepped up and at least showed a lot of leadership. And it's guys like that that help you get to the finals of the summer league.
Yeah, man. Shout out to Mason, man. I don't know what's going to happen with him in his NBA career, But he's a really good basketball player. Like, he is really good at basketball. And like you said, he played through an oblique injury. He's still trying to get a contract, man. He's still trying to make it happen for him, man. So shout out to Mason Jones. I like my guy, man. And I like my guy, James Ham. I appreciate you pulling up on D-Lo and KC like you always do on Mondays and Wednesdays at 3. We got through the show, man. Like, it flew by. You know what I mean?
You survived.
Yeah, it flew by, man. I'm jet lagged and all this other stuff, so I'm still trying to figure all this out. But we're going to be back tomorrow. Remember, Jesse, I'm not going to even lead the show with this. I'm not going to lie to you guys. I'm not going to cast you. But tomorrow, Jerry Jones, GM Kenny Caraway. Kind of the same.
The mega powers collide tomorrow.
Kind of the same. I'll break it all down. Tristan Crick is going to be on the show. Jason Jones is going to be on the show. And I may have a surprise or two. So we're going to have a good time tomorrow, man. Make sure you get started at 10 a.m. right here. 10 a.m. Get started at 10 a.m. right here on ESPN 1320 with James Hamm, Kyle Mattson, the Insiders. Then we got D-Lo and KC taking from 12 to 4. Appreciate y'all. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Vamos, gigantes. Let's get a win. Y'all be good.